Street, and then meander south to merge with 2 Mile Huntington State Beach. The pier area is Huntington's most famous and challenging surfing zone, but the state beach is the stuff of surf culture movies. Waves come straight in from the south onto one of the widest expanses of sand you'll see this side of the Colorado desert. Bolsa Chica State Beach, north of Surf City, is better for beginners. Surfing lessons are offered by local surf shops and Corky Carroll's Surf School, the town's first. Mandatory for local surfing history is a visit to the International Surfing Museum at 411 Olive Avenue. Among the oldies but goodies collected inside are vintage surfboards, of course, including Batman's board from the original movie. To appreciate natural history, head north. Remnants of once vast coastal wetlands, spongy saltgrass marshes, support endangered migratory birds and other threatened wildlife. See for yourself at both Seal Beach National Wildlife Refuge at the Naval Weapons Station and at Bolsa Chica Ecological Reserve, just south. Until next time, when we visit Southern California's premier yacht harbor, this is Kim Weir for Up the Road.
This is KZFR 90.1, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Tonight on Ecotopia, we will be discussing housing, environmental impacts of development, and important updates with the Valley's Edge specific plan development proposed for the foothills above Chico. But first, we will listen to the song titled Little Boxes by Pete Seeger, a commentary on suburban development.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, and they all got put in boxes, little boxes all the same. And there's doctors and there's lawyers and business executives, and they all get put in boxes and they all come out the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, and they all get put in boxes, and they all come out the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family, and they all get put in boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 FM, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological, looking for solutions to some of Earth's current problems, such as global warming, overpopulation, social justice, fossil fuels, water, land, and air pollution. I'm Jared Geiser, co-hosting Ecotopia in the studio today with Maggie Scarpa. We are subbing for the Chuties, and tonight on Ecotopia, we'll be discussing housing, environmental impacts of development, and important updates with the Valley's Edge development with housing analyst and City Council candidate Addison Winslow, as well as Marty Dunlap, a member of Smart Growth Advocates. And, Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Lily's Brazilian Bistro, offering traditional Brazilian cuisine made from fresh, locally sourced organic ingredients in the heart of downtown Chico. Lily's Brazilian Bistro serves traditional Brazilian dishes as diverse, exciting, and colorful as Brazil itself. Located at 142 Broadway, open Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., with dine-in and outdoor seating. More information, including to-go orders and reservations, at 530-399-0675 and on Facebook and Instagram. Ecotopia is also made possible by all of you generous contributions out there and KZFR supporters, as well as by Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. Ken believes in the importance of community radio and encourages other members of the medical community to join the KZFR underwriting family. That's Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. And I'll give a brief disclaimer that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily express the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, and programmers.
Our guests tonight are Addison Winslow and Marty Dunlap. Addison Winslow is a city council candidate for District 4, a housing analyst and community advocate. Raised in Chico and Paradise and seasoned by traveling and living in cities across North America, he is both personally affected by recent climate disasters and has the knowledge, expertise, and gracious attitude to help Chico become the green city of the North State. Addison believes in more housing, less sprawl, and better neighborhoods for all. He wants to fight for the ordinary working people of Chico and Butte County who deserve a city free of houselessness, poverty, and natural disaster. Addison has been closely following the Valley's Edge specific plan development for over a year and has done thorough review and analysis of the project's environmental impact report, especially relating to the housing and transportation elements. He is a Chico local and longtime advocate for affordable housing, tenant rights, safe streets, and numerous proposals to enhance the urban landscape for people and the environment. Marty Dunlap has been living in Butte County for 52 years and came to Chico from the Bay Area to attend university. She worked in institutional research at CSU Chico and worked at Butte College for 26 years, initially as a college counselor and later coordinating the testing program for entering students. And she conducted statistical research at Butte College on student performance and net outcomes. She received her law degree in 2003 and focused on public interest law, providing a voice for the public's perspective. She has been involved in water issues of Northern California for 20 years and also on minimizing unnecessary tree removal, protecting the rights of the unhoused population, working towards police reform, and most recently assisting with the efforts of smart growth advocates in promoting land use that is the least impactful given the myriad of issues related to climate change. Welcome to the show, Addison and Marty.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Very generous introduction.
Before we dive into the specific development that is going on in through the planning processes, tell us a little bit about what type of development you both would like to see for Chico, like what, where, what type, and like who is the housing for?
So we have a shortage of housing for working class and low.
I think it's coming through.
Is this one working?
There we go. Now it's working.
Yeah. All right. Right.
I can maybe repeat the question really quick. Sorry for the technical difficulties, everyone.
Definitely. So before we dive into Valley's Edge, that process that's going through the planning entitlement process, tell us a little bit about what you both believe you want to see for Chico in terms of housing.
So thank you, Jared and Maggie. Very generous introductions. What kind of housing do we need in Chico? We have a shortage of housing for working class and low-income people. We need housing for above moderate income people too, but not to the same degree, and we don't really have a difficulty in getting that. We exceed our targets for above moderate income housing, but we consistently fall short of low income housing. And where housing should go to meet different community goals that we have, including reducing greenhouse gas emissions, diversifying neighborhoods and supporting public transit and commercial services for neighborhoods, we should have more housing going into existing areas of the city, especially around downtown and in areas where there are walkable services. We want to have functional, high-quality public transit in the future. And in order to get there, we need to have more housing along transit routes so people can rely on those transit routes. They're in a built environment that supports that. In our general plan, it says that we should have people living in complete neighborhoods, and complete neighborhoods described as having commercial services, having a diversity of housing types, and having things like street trees and sidewalks. And we have a lot of high-density areas right now that are lacking in those things. And we have a lot of where we have those qualities, the areas that have been built somewhat well, we typically zone for low density, for the minimum amount of housing. And we should be introducing more diversity into those neighborhoods. And when the city has funds to distribute themselves to different to housing projects, we shouldn't be focusing it in areas on the end of town like Valley's Edge. We should be focusing that in the core of the city.
I agree, of course, with many of maybe all of Addison's points. He gave so many, it's hard to keep up with them all. But in addition to that, I think that it's important to protect our groundwater areas where it recharges, because water obviously is becoming a significant issue and will continue to be so in the future, as well as minimizing sprawl. Many people who live in Chico have come from areas where it has just become nothing but neighborhoods that are spreading out over mini malls and street after street. And preserving our open space is a significant part of why Chico is special. And so to not take that into account and try to have more high-density housing is really a false move on our parts.
Definitely. And so there are a lot of terms for different types of housing, but some that has been brought up in Chico is smart growth and smart growth development. What is smart growth to both of you, and why is this one type of development type of development to aspire for?
I'll go first, and many of these points have already been mentioned, but basically it's high density, doing infill, having areas where people can get to work and shopping and taking their children to recreational activities more closely, not having to get into the car and travel so much in a vehicle, which means a city that supports transit, mass transportation, as well as keeping our tree canopy, and so that it is an area that is beautiful as well as functional.
What I'd like to add on to that in terms of what constitutes smart growth is that smart growth is smart financially. We talk about the environmental effects, and that's something that I imagine we'll focus a lot on, because having walkable communities prevents people from having to rely on automobiles and all the effects, greenhouse gas emissions of traffic. I mean, it's the biggest safety issue we have in the city is car traffic. That's where you're most likely to die a violent death in the city. But it is smarter financially, because we have existing infrastructure in the city that that our city government is already on the hook to maintain. The city is underfunded. That's why they're pushing a sales tax. The sales tax won't even make up for that. We're dramatically underfunded for our roads. The city is considering privatizing our sewers. We don't even have a team to maintain our urban forest anymore. And so we're falling short in all these ways, but we have areas within the core of the city that are producing little to no tax revenue. So the dumb growth, the flip side of smart growth, would be we're looking for new areas outside the city that are that currently serve purposes as open space and habitat, and we want to build new housing there when we have all these areas that are underperforming in the core of our city. Improving those areas, so using existing infrastructure to get more tax revenue out of it, is the way that you can fund a city in the long run. Building more on the outskirts requires us to extend the amount of infrastructure the city is burdened to maintain without giving us an adequate tax base for it. It's those sort of developments for the last 70 years since the Second World War that have led us to having a city that's fundamentally financially insolvent. We do not generate enough taxes to maintain the infrastructure that we have, so we should not be creating new infrastructure unless we're really sure that that's going to produce more taxes than it's going to cost. But this isn't the way suburban sprawl has been, and this is not the way that these new projects proposed on the end of town are going to be.
One thing I'd like to pipe in with is we're definitely going to talk about environmental impacts fiscal impacts, but one tenet of smart growth that I stick to is communities with a sense of place. For a lot of these sprawled out communities that have really spirally suburban circulation where they're, it's not a grid, you aren't able to see all of your neighbors, it's these huge lots with low density development, is generally it has been found that the communities don't have a sense of place as much as smart growth communities do.
Certainly, and smart growth communities are going to contain a wide range of housing, whereas dumb growth development, as we call it, as it, as smart growth infers, is just going to be more like of the same homogenized landscape, more, as Maggie was saying, kind of not giving you a sense of place, all looking the same. And in the case of the biggest dumb growth project that the city of Chico's ever seen, Valley's Edge, the vast majority of the housing is going to be single-family homes for above moderate incomes. It's really not a wide range of housing. It's really just concentrating the overwhelming majority of land to be low-density housing for the wealthy people. And so if you've been just tuned into Ecotopia, we're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, and if you've been tuning into the show for a while, you've heard about Valley's Edge, you know what's going on, you're familiar with some of the major issues. But if you're not familiar, I'll give a brief just overview of the project. So Valley's Edge is a proposed development slated to destroy about 1,500 acres of land east of Bruce Road between Stillson Canyon and Honey Run Roads. It's a prime example of urban sprawl, which would degrade air quality, exacerbate traffic congestion and automobile dependence, as well as contribute to an irreparable loss of wildlands and habitat for sensitive species. The project would also increase the fire risk for the city of Chico and arguably most significantly cause a significant and unavoidable increase in greenhouse gas emissions, which exacerbates the climate crisis that threatens the sustainability of our civilization. And so the development is so large that it actually has its own specific plan with its own goals, policy, and programs, and its own land use regulations. And so the final specific plan document and the final EIR are out. They were released just in the past few weeks. And the Planning Commission will be convening soon after the November election to meet, to look at this project, and ultimately certify the environmental impact report. And since there's significant and unavoidable impacts, the Planning Commission for the City of Chico will be required to adopt a statement of overriding consideration for aesthetics and greenhouse gases. Because no matter what mitigations they could do, they couldn't mitigate the negative impacts to aesthetics by destroying all the open space above Chico. They couldn't mitigate the impacts to climate change because this is going to be a completely automobile-dependent development, despite what minor things they've done to improve walkability. It's going to be people driving cars. And so this is coming up, and ultimately we'll go to the council for final approval. And so I want to ask our guests in the studio, Addison Winslow and Marty Dunlap, is there anything the two of you would like to add to the description of Valley's Edge or any information you believe listeners need to know before we dive into this?
I think one important thing stands out to me, having grown up next to this land and so I was familiar with the land before the specific plan was proposed. I don't think you mentioned it. It's proposed as a homeowners association. So because it's such an inefficient use of land, the city doesn't want to take on the burden of all the infrastructure within it. So the streets, the sidewalks, the curbs, the trees, these are all proposed to be many of the parks maintained and owned by a homeowners association. It would be paid for by HOA fees within it. That's like California Park in that you need an ID to walk around California Park. You might be able to get away with it for a while, but they do pay a private security person who will ID you. And they ID kids that come and want to fish in the lake or something. And Valley's Edge, very similar to that, because they're also proposing to create a lake just for recreational purposes. And these parks and the streets, they won't be accessible to the public. I think for such an enormous area in our foothills and like this like beautiful natural surroundings, that's a really important point for people to understand. It doesn't have to be that way. They're just building it so inefficiently the city won't adopt the infrastructure. So they are requiring that it be privately owned and maintained. And as a condition of that, they get to exclude people from access to the development.
What about you, Martin? Anything else you'd like to add about Valley's Edge to give the listeners some more context?
Right. So I know that the developer is you know, promoting this project as, you know, really protecting the land. However, as Addison says, it's really taking it away from the public and locking it up for, you know, just certain people who have access to it. And I think one of the things that's so important to me is it's not a necessary project right now. We have so much housing going on that this is really an extravagance, and it does require taking away open space. And open space is something that's very important to us. So I think that in addition to it being more than we need, it is something that will keep a big chunk of land, 1,500 acres, from being accessible even just by viewing it to the public.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think one thing that I want to add is this piece of land is not within the city limits yet. It's in their sphere of influence, and so they'll also need to go through the annexation process to annex into Chico. So currently this land is said to be for the city of Chico, but currently it's so sprawled out they would need to annex to actually be within the city of Chico. And so that's another part of the planning process that they're going to have to go through the local, through LAFCO. So.
All right. And so the final specific plan and final environmental impact report were published earlier this month. So what has changed for this development? Because they did make some amendments. So what has changed with the proposed development compared to the draft that was released last November?
So there were a lot of criticisms of this development that came out in the public comment process. Some of them I authored as part of Butte Environmental Council's advocacy committee. And some of the major issues that they've alluded to is the greenhouse gas emissions, which is really related to the automobile dependence that is implied in the design of this development. The fact that it would, the transportation impact, would, and a lot of that's related to it being so sprawled out. So even when they offer commercial services, they say it's a mixed-use development, but it's about the size of the town of Orland. We don't say Orland is a mixed-use town. It's simply a town. And so there's a lot of housing that's going up more than a mile away from any kind of commercial services. But even those services, there isn't enough surrounding density of housing for them to sustainably support like basic needs like a grocery store or a pharmacy. So we put all these criticisms in that like there's no market analysis to support that the commercial on-site would support the needs of the residents and they wouldn't just be driving to Walmart or Winco and they would provide like specialty services. And so in response to that, so the very substantial criticisms of it, of the whole of the claims that they had to being a 20-minute neighborhood where you can walk to anything within 20 minutes, they made some minor changes. We pointed out that new developments are supposed to support public transit. That's in Chico's general plan. And in order to be supportive of public transit, agencies across the country have sort of a benchmark standard of about 15 units an acre. That's about the density surrounding the Esplanade. And the density of Valley's Edge, just the residential portion, not counting any of the open space or the parks, was 4.1 units per acre. That's on the low end of low density. They took out some parts that were like very low density zoning that were like literal mansions with over an acre of land. They removed some of those portions in response to the comments, changing the density overall from 4.1 to about 4.6 units per acre. So nowhere near the changes needed to support public transit, to support walkable services, to support like a efficient enough tax base to where the city could adopt the infrastructure. The things that we were asking for, we wanted an alternative proposed that would meet those goals. They did not provide that alternative, and the changes they made to the project were just minor in the face of very serious, substantial criticisms.
So I reviewed the comments that had been submitted by the California Department of Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife. And two of their main concerns were the Butte County meadow foam as well as the oaks. And they were saying that the data that was submitted was outdated. It was from 2017 and you know, since then we've had the fire, we've had a lot of other changes, and that they really need to have new data. The response was, no, we don't think that is out of date. We think it's fine.
Oh, wow.
The other information I had reviewed was a comment letter from LAFCO, which Maggie was just referencing, and they were talking about the 14 points that this project needs to go through to be eligible for annexation. And two of their main concerns have to do with the availability of water as well as open space and whether or not the project is going to comply with those. So those will be big issues that really haven't been addressed yet. They feel that they'll do everything they need to, but that those are two outstanding areas with this project at this time.
Yeah, it's kind of absurd that they think they know more than the wildlife biologists about their surveys being incomplete or outdated.
One thing about CEQA is CEQA is the California Environmental Quality Act. It is what it's the environmental review process that Valley's Edge is going through, and one big tenet is disclosure and transparency. So they have to analyze the project for multiple different environmental impacts. Some of what we've talked about, disclose that for transparency as well as public input and public comment, but they don't always have to incorporate that public comment. Move on for timeline for this project. It's been a long time since 2019. It is 2022. Where are we in this process? What is going on now and what is to come?
So I think the developers intended to have this approved probably this summer before campaign started, before election season. So it was kind of like just passed on. It's off people's minds. There were a lot of comments made. They had to renegotiate the contract with their consultant to respond to the comments. So it delayed them a whole lot. So we were hearing that this document was going to come out in early August. It didn't come out in early August. And it would have come out in somewhere in September or this earlier this month. But the developer specifically requested the planning department that they postpone approval of the project until after the election. Hmm. We can guess why. I mean, the people have strong feelings about the sort of development. One is an if, you know, as Marty said, is this a superfluous project? I don't really think so necessarily. But in big picture, in terms of like planning for our housing needs, people do want to see more affordable housing in Chico, and this project is not at all meeting that. It is an enormous project. It can provide a lot of housing, but not the sort of housing that we need. So because of the political implications, the developer asked for it to be postponed. So we're looking at early December, there being a planning commission meeting where if the planning commission approves it, then it moves on in the city council, which would be the new city council I might be sitting on, will be reviewing the project probably mid or late December if nothing else postpones that further.
So just to add a little bit further, the certification of the EIR is what gives the stamp of approval, and that it sits with the city council. So, you know, whether or not it's going to be in December, we think it probably will be, but it could even roll over to January. But that's going to be the major stamp, and then they'll be applying for the annexation process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I didn't mention that I did see as a change, and that is there's a Oakland monitoring and mitigation plan that goes with this. And initially, the development department in the city is where they could give exemptions to a tree could be cut as opposed to being preserved, and they removed that particular ability for someone within that department to be the one giving the axe to a tree, oak.
How interesting. So, so what are you guys doing in regards to opposition to this development? What is being done with Smart Growth Advocates, with other organizations? What activities have you all engaged in?
Well, I think the main one has been educating the public, making sure that the population, not just the population of Chico, but Paradise, Butte County, people in the outlying areas who depend on groundwater and their water might be depleted because of the draw for these additional residents in this area. It is in an area where we believe the Lower Tuscan is recharged. Making sure that people know about this. And so I think that's been a big part of it, as well as organizing some of the legal aspects that could be undertaken if this does receive certification from the Chico City Council.
Me, personally, I'm running for city council on a platform of more housing, less sprawl, which you could look at specifically referring to this project and the alternative that Butte Environmental Council put forward, saying that if you're going to do this project, because we do need housing, because it is designated in the general plan, if we're going to do this project, that you can do it with the same or more housing, but not run roads up the ridge lines so we preserve more of the area as a fire break, as a park, as open space, as habitat, and we get more housing down the hill, because the effect of that is the housing that you get that's more compact is actually more affordable. You have smaller units, you have higher density, shared foundations, shared roofs, shared walls. All this makes housing more affordable. It's actually the state uses density as a proxy for affordability. So you increase the density. Not only do you preserve more open space, which meets our community goals, the desires of many people, but you also get housing that is more affordable. It being more compact, that housing also provides more support for local commercial services and public transit. So all these things that are lacking the development can be addressed by reducing the sprawl and keeping that housing along what could be a transit route, as opposed to a bunch of roads that are essentially cul-de-sacs running up the ridgeline, and make it a lot more affordable for the city, for the members of the homeowners association, if that were to continue, and the units themselves would be cheaper. When I talk about this, nobody has really pushed back on this. There are some particular realtors that I think are involved in the project, or they anticipate being involved in selling the houses there, that like to see big houses because they know that they sell, right? People are coming with cash in hand to buy these things. But when it comes to general community members, everybody wants to see more compact Chico. Everybody does not want to see sprawl going up the ridgelines. Everybody wants to see our fire break be preserved. So I'm finding a lot of resonance with this. The best we can do, because we have elections coming up, is to continue to raise awareness about this project and make sure that people know that the future of this depends on the outcome of this election. There are myself, three other candidates, Morgan Kennedy in District 2, Monica McDaniel in District 3, and Jessica Giannola in District 6, that are committed to making sure that this project, if it passes, is held to higher standards than the city is holding it to right now. The others are in support of the project, whatever they propose. They probably could take away all the apartments and make it all single-family houses, and they would be okay with it. There's this feeling that it's like, if we need housing, we shouldn't have standards for it. And the outcome of the election is going to determine the outcome of the approval of this project.
Definitely. And so for both of you, what are the other groups that you've been working with or that you know of that have been opposing this development as well?
Well, of course, Smart Growth Advocates, and then Butte Environmental Council. Aqua Alliance did submit very, very salient points. Also, the California Native Plant Society, the Mount Lassen chapter, as well as the Sierra Club, the Motherlode chapter. So, let's see.
I'll add Friends of Butte Creek and the Altacala Audubon Society. That I'll put comments in on the environmental impact report, and with the goal of improving or opposing the project.
That's right. Yeah, I work for the Altacala Audubon Society, and this organization has opposed it primarily because of the loss of bird habitat that would come about from this, as well as from the serious climate change impacts, because climate change really threatens not only humans, but it threatens like most North American bird species. And mitigating climate change can seriously reduce the negative impacts to our society and to the birds.
Well, thank you all for this incredible information you've been providing, and we're going to pull up a song and take a short break and listen to Subdivisions by Rush.
Stick around.
Right.
And we're back. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR Chico 90.1 FM. Tonight on Ecotopia, we're discussing housing, environmental impacts of development, and important updates with the Valley's Edge Development with housing analyst and city council candidate Addison Winslow and Marty Dunlap, a public interest attorney and advocate with Smart Growth Advocates. So, as we mentioned, we're talking about Valley's Edge, and so let's talk about the transportation system for a little bit, and I'll foreshadow this question with just acknowledging that the city of Chico and the state of California both have climate neutrality goals by 2045, which means that per capita emissions are going to be needing to be at zero emissions per person per year by 2045, the same year that this development is expected to be completed. And the environmental review documents demonstrate that this development will prevent that climate action plan attainment because of the significant emissions, the 17,000 metric tons of CO2 they expect to be emitting every year. So let's talk about how people are going to be getting around. How would residents of this proposed Valley's Edge development get around to jobs, to errands, downtown? What realistic options do they have to get around? One second.
So, As part of some of the requirements in our general plan, there are going to be bike trails, walking trails out in this place, it's in the southeast foothills of Chico, so the end of East 20th Street around Skyway. There's supposed to be a roundabout put in on Skyway that would be the main entrance to the project, and it sits about a mile from Merriam Park. A little bit because the development is over, there's over a mile that you might be in the upper end of the development. It could be multiple miles in order to get to Merriam Park. Some people in one part might be able to walk to it sometimes. There's going to be a lot of traffic going down East 20th, so you're going to be walking by like an arterial road with high-speed traffic, which even if the distance isn't too much, not a super comfortable walking environment. They're not designing that as a urban street like East 8th Street. They put in these curves along the park so that traffic goes slower. There's a nice walking path. We don't have that on East 20th, and that's not planned. So there certainly would be some deficiencies in getting to Merriam Park. As far as on the project site, there's some commercial, two nodes of commercial areas planned. Like I said, I think it's very dubious that those would provide basic services for people if they started to. Might not in the long run. Merriam Park right now is having a difficult time getting a tenant for the market building. The developer is offering like a subsidy for it just to try to get somebody to occupy that and run a market in Merriam Park. And if they can't do that there with the density they have, what luck will they have in a very low density development like Valley's Edge? I think not so much. I mentioned this, I think, in the comments in the EIR. The Longfellow neighborhood, think of the area, what's now in Motion Fitness, around there, that was planned as it's a walkable community. You drive into downtown. It's one of the earliest suburban sprawl projects in Chico, and you would drive into your work in downtown, and then you drive back there, and then you should be able to walk around there. And at one point, and even when I was alive, there was a pharmacy. We used to pay our water bill there, and there used to be a grocery store. It was Holidays. That's what's called. That was before my time. And there was a hardware store there even. All of that's a gym now. It's one destination fitness center. And that's the sort of thing you get when you don't have high enough density. You get commercial spaces, but they become specialty commercial. And that's what I think a market analysis would show would happen based on the density proposed for Valley's Edge. So the walkable services are probably going to be non-existent there. So people will have to go to the box stores that are on that end of town. You got Winco, you got Walmart, you got Target. But they're not conveniently accessible by bike or on foot, and it's too great of a distance from Valley's Edge. Also worth noting that half the project is reserved for seniors, 55 and up, and it's going to be a lot of the housing is planned for higher elevations rather than concentrating it down towards the base, which makes it more difficult to walk and bike right into those areas. As we've kind of touched on already, most people are certainly going to depend on driving in order to get between their houses and the things they need and their workplaces there. I also alluded to we have a general plan policy that says that new development should be supportive of public transit. However, we were not specific enough with that, as we're finding out now, because they're considering accommodating public transit or supporting public transit is building a bus pullout. But We've talked to BCAG, who provides bus service. They're not going to provide a bus out there based on the planning. They will provide a bus to Barber Yard because Barber Yard, that's the Diamond Match factory site, that development is being planned with high enough densities that it will support public transit. So they're planning on running a transit route through there, even though that development's further out. But Valley's Edge is not going to have it because it's not designed to be supportive of public transit.
I want to reiterate what you the point you made, Jared, and that is that the plan in at least the EIR does support the fact there's going to be more carbon emissions with this than what is currently in place and what needs to be in place. So we're definitely not building in the right direction. The other is one of Smart Growth's proposals is that you use electric buses, and the city doesn't seem to be embracing that and putting that into place either, which would allow for ease of transportation. But we need that ease of transportation within the city, not in an outside area where it's miles to get into a shopping area.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, is it something else we should talk about, because there's some interesting things with the development. One of them is that they plan for most of it to be accessible by neighborhood electric vehicles, aka like golf carts. And so some people could, it's like they're like almost looking towards like a future of transportation, but they're still insisting that it be like personal, like automobiles, just in this case, like small golf carts that you can't leave the development with because you can't ride it on Skyway or East 20th Street. But within the development, theoretically, people could ride around on golf carts, which could be kind of neat, I guess.
I have seen some electric golf carts. They're probably really expensive, but they could do that.
Yeah, then Chico State, they have a little like pickup truck one, which I see them carrying stuff with it all the time. And actually, the Gonzales Development Company in Marion Park, they use a couple. They ride around with that. One more note on transportation is there will be jobs in this development, right? So we're talking, there are commercial spaces, and it's not that those commercial spaces will necessarily be vacant. They just might not provide the kind of things we would hope they would, groceries and pharmaceuticals. But there will be some restaurants, right? And it's a nice place. I imagine people riding their bike along the bike path will stop there. So there might be some commercial activity going on there, but the housing being provided does not support the working class that works those jobs. Mm. So in addition to the people on site who live there not being able to get the things that they need on site and having to drive off of it, the people who work the jobs that are provided in the care facilities for seniors too, they're not going to be able to live there. The only – you know, in order to have affordable housing to low-income families, by the city's own analysis the density should be about 23 units per acre. The maximum density, the highest density allowed on Valley's Edge on any acre is 22 units an acre, so just one short of the density that could support affordable housing, should be feasible for it. And they're proposing a density of 18 units an acre for it, so lower than that. And that's on 9 acres. It's less than 6% of the total housing units that will be apartments.
So you're saying less than 6% of the housing units meet a density somewhat near affordable housing, but still not even affordable?
Still none. Yeah, and this is, while we're on it, I feel like this has been sort of a confusing point for a lot of people. I've heard people say that there will be very little affordable housing in this development. It's inaccurate because there will probably be none. Because of what I just mentioned, no acreage on it meets the density that we should have in order to accommodate affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And even when we're talking about affordable, we mean that like there are public subsidies that we get, like all these disaster relief public subsidies leading to the affordable housing projects being built around town now. In a piece of land, and a developer just have to like meet some requirements in order to take those public subsidies. If they were to try that on these 9 acres that we have for apartments in Valley's Edge, it's going to cost a lot more money. One, it being on lava rock, right? It's just that development is more expensive. And then two, you have a homeowner association with all these private amenities like that lake that I mentioned, but also the roads and all the infrastructure is going to be maintained with HOA fees. They charge – in California Park, they charge by the door. So when you have apartments in California Park, they pay the same HOA fee as a large single-family house. I made comments on like questioning what the structure of HOA fees was going to be and whether the people in the apartments were going to be subsidizing the sprawl up in the higher portion of the development. And it is not clear like how they're going to run that. So it's likely that even if it was affordable housing, it would require excess subsidy because of these other aspects of the development that are inefficient.
And another point, in addition to the carbon emissions is the traffic congestion. Mm-hmm. And the number of cars that will be coming out either into the Skyway or onto East 20th Street. We all know that Chico has gotten so congested with traffic stops and can't get through because there's so many more vehicles now. It's going to only add to the congestion, and that is not desirable. So we definitely need to be thinking about other ways that people can be getting around and not having to be far out and transported in, but mm-hmm. being within a sphere of livability.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can widen Bruce Road. They are widening Bruce Road. You can't widen East 20th Street anymore. Can we widen the freeway, Highway 99? Maybe. I hope not. I don't think that many
but
people in Chico
we'll
want to see us
induce,
do that.
Like traffic, like if we do expand it with utilizing level of service analysis, we would just induce more traffic for our highways. So to segue into another point, one issue members of the community are worried about is fire risk. This area has burned. It was a back burn during the campfire. What is the fire risk for this community?
The area in the EIR, they say that the area is predicted to burn every 5 to 11 years.
5 to 15, yeah.
5 to 15 years, yeah, and it's accurate. It's burned three times since 1999.
Yep, three times in the last 15.
Three times in the last 15 years. And we know that that's going to continue, and actually part of the response to that by the developer, this I find very interesting, is having pressurized water pipes running all over. And they actually say that that private lake, that they would use that, tap into that to fight the inevitable wildfires coming rushing down the hills, which is interesting, I think. So the fire risk is it's like moderate or high on the site. It's almost certain that we're going to have to deal with this. And in response to that, again, one of the nice things of our general plan is we did say that this area would have to preserve a buffer on the edges, the eastern edge of the development, so that it would provide a fire break, right? Just like this land has served for Chico, you know, three times in the last 15 years. Last 21 years, I guess. Do the math there, but we were not specific in the general plan about how much of a fire break we needed them to maintain. We would require them to maintain. So in the land use plan, that's just conceptual in our general plan, there's a certain amount of fire break. This specific plan came out when we had a large conservative city council majority, and knowing that, I think they would have a lot more leniency with the way they did. The plan they came out with included about 40% more sprawl. The residential portion compared to the open space, they increased it by about 40%. Every single housing unit included in that was low density, a single family house. They didn't add any, you know, wow. It's supposed to be flexible in response to our housing needs. And our housing needs mm-hmm. for low income families dramatically increased after the campfire. And their response was to add more large luxury houses and erode that fire break into a smaller strip on
so
the edge of the development.
Just quickly, in the community wildfire protection plan that has come out for the city, it is clearly stated that the eastern side of the city is the most vulnerable. And that's where this development is going in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a fire hazard, and it's not going to be affordable housing, and it's destroying wildlife habitat, and it's exacerbating climate change. There's all these huge issues. Then this development is just not on the side of making progress towards addressing these pivotal issues. It's just exacerbating just about every single environmental and social issue we're faced with. So what can people do in the next coming months? What tactics can be employed to stop this destructive sprawl?
Well, Smart Growth Advocates has a website, smartgrowthchico.org, and they are hoping people will write letters to the Planning Commission as well as the City Council. We have sample letters there for people to draw on, as well as bullet points, things to be including. We are trying to be prepared for legal action if it doesn't go the way that we think it ought to. So also going to the website, they'll see some of the things that we're putting into place, but we are prepared to go forward so the public does have a right to have control over what happens to Chico.
Mm-hmm. Addison, anything to say on to that front, or is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I mean, I absolutely support the organizing efforts of Smart Growth Advocates and Butte Environmental Council, and I would encourage people to connect with those organizations and help out. You can help out with volunteer time, connecting and being part of like organizing these efforts, or just kicking some money in. It is really important that we have some funding in order to combat this, in order to educate people. And
right.
Writing letters to the local government is a good way to do it. And I will certainly shamelessly plug that I am running for city council, and I have colleagues running for city council too, and do vote and look into these issues and make sure that whoever you're voting for is aligned with you on this, because it is a huge moment for the future of Chico. This development will not be completed by their estimate until 2045, and Canyon Oaks, a gated community up above California Park, was approved in the 1980s, and they are still building large houses out there. There are still empty lots for sale, and that's probably the future of this too. It's a reservoir for building housing for the rich for years to come. Well, we're like critically short of available land for affordable housing, and in order to have a better outcome for this, the future, we need people to be involved like right now in this election. We have 2 weeks left until it's over, and so be a part of that process. You can look up my campaign, Addison for Chico. .org or on social media. Everything is Addison for Chico.
Jared, sure to vote, everyone.
Can I make one more point?
Of course.
Talking to a reliable source in the county, Chico was supposed to be building 400 houses per year to keep up with growth. And they were falling behind that. But in the last 3 years, they are building 3,000 houses per year.
Per year?
Per year.
Wow.
So it's 7.5 times more than that. So people are saying, we need this. We need housing. We do need housing, but there's a lot of housing being built right now. Mm-hmm. We don't need this type of housing. It's extravagant. This is a 20th century development mm-hmm. being built in the 21st century. We have a lot of concerns that we need to be taking into account to have smart growth as we go into our future.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Marty Dunlap and Addison Winslow, for being on the show. Addison, if you wouldn't mind reiterating the city council candidates that are kind of willing to prioritize the needs of our community over the greed of developers. Would you be able to reiterate the candidates, the progressive candidates running for city council, so our listeners can know who to support?
In District 2, Morgan Kennedy. In District 3, Monica McDaniel. In District 4, that's me. I live in West Avs, Addison Winslow. And in District 6, Jessica Gianola. She's very concerned about fire risk and promoting more affordable housing, and is very much on the same page as me in regards to this development.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for being on Ecotopia. Stay tuned after Ecotopia for North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, exploring ecosystems, environmental, technological, and social. Thanks for tuning in and taking the time to learn about critical issues in our community. Please go to smartgrowthchico.org to learn more about smart growth, Valley's Edge, and how you can help make Chico the best it can be without sacrificing our future. Yeah, we also welcome your comments and suggestions. Stephen and Susan Chudy, the full-time host of the show, you can email them at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm going to play a song to close us out by Rising Appalachia called Resilient.
Waters, women at the center, all vessels open. system right down to its knees. Whoa, whoa.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling them at 898-9525.